Weekend Show here on WWPR, 1490 AM. And let's quick do the station ID, WWPR, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, Tampa Bay. And our next guest is timely and an expert, which is always a good thing to have. Alexei Putin is a technology expert for tax purposes in regards to cryptocurrency. He's a CPA, and he is a self-described technology addict who's always been on the lookout for the next great app or gadget. He has over 20 years of corporate tax and CPA self-practitioner experience. He loves to tweak and demystify things, which is what makes him a great guest for us today. He's based in Tampa. We'll give you their contact info in just a moment. But let's welcome him to the Henry Rain Show. Alexei Putin, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks. Pleasure to be on the line with you guys.
Yeah, so you are in Tampa now, and the practice is can be found at the website cloudcpas.net. So you just take the word cloudcpas.net. We'll give a phone number for that in just a moment. It's, the company is Kooten & Associates, CPAs, PC. Alexei, now I believe you practiced up north, too, and then you moved your practice down here south. Have you always been interested in accounting as a career, or how did this become to be your vocation and profession?
Okay, so it's kind of a loaded question, but simple answer, to be honest. Accounting was a degree I picked in college. I guess it was second year after migrating to the United States back in 1993. And I kind of stick to the profession, to great pride in the fact that you could become a licensed professional and serve public at large, and really enjoyed it passionately through my corporate career and through my individual enterprises. At the same time, always kind of staying, in, as my friends call me, AV geek, due to my great interest in computers and all kinds of technologies. And I try to combine the both, I guess, as a niche together in all of my endeavors, both in corporate stints and otherwise. So progression through cryptocurrencies, it was just natural, and it literally came from personal interest. But it was marriage made in heaven, since it's really like the best combination of technology and professional tech knowledge that I can combine and hopefully assist other people to benefit from in terms of tech compliance and just dealing with Uncle Sam.
And you're also referred to by some of your clients as Alex. Alex, are you on a speaker right now?
No, I'm on a microphone.
Oh, okay. All right, well, let me adjust my mic a little bit. I mean, our track here for you.
With this high-tech equipment we have here.
Yeah. So there's a lot of people. Let me ask you this. How long have you been helping people, I know it can't be that long, with their cryptocurrency tax issues?
Honestly, this is second year. I had clients or prospective clients approaching me with digital asset-related questions or reporting of thereof. As you know, majority of people prefer to stay on the sideline and wait for the government to step in and introduce at least some kind of clarity. Unfortunately, we are far away from that position yet. The number of clients who literally reported digital trade has been minimal, but subject matter gets more and more traction every day. I cannot tell you how many calls I get a week from different people addressing essentially the same questions. So I'm pretty sure 2017 and 2018 will be critical years of getting compliance addressed, at least from voluntary disclosure standpoint, because knowing just how IRS likes to work retroactively, just in terms of legislature or regulation or imposing fines and penalties years after these are done, it's only a question of time before 2017 and 2018 will get under scope. So since 2017 was a from performance standpoint, and people reported significant, or at least realized significant gains on exchanges and so forth from ICOs. iOS definitely is on the lookout and definitely will be probing into 2017 in years to come. So my recommendation, I think, is consistent with majority of professional CPAs recommendations. It is in line with being as conservative as possible, just in terms of reporting your gains, and be proactive in terms of what you report and how you calculate your gains and losses, so that in case of IRS contacting you or questioning your records, your position is conservative as opposed to way too aggressive, where you end up underpaid.
Now, question for you.
Let me just ID him for the audience again, because there's a lot of people out there that need to know this. So we're speaking with Alexi Kooten, CPA at Kooten Associates. Their website is cloudcpas.net. The toll-free number that you can call from anywhere is 800-610-2521. That's 800-610-2521. Alex, you may want to plug in a headset so that you can get some of this, because I know you're getting questions from Alex is not a CPA, but he does help people out. And he gets a lot of questions on this, so I want to make sure he has a chance to hear this. So, Andy, you had a question.
Yeah, a big question for me is the IRS is pretty vague in how they consider cryptocurrencies or as a digital asset, and I guess they bring it down to, it looks, at least to me it does, and I'm just the average guy here, that it depends how you use it. If you use it as a currency, it's taxed as a currency, and you pay capital gains on it. But if you use it as a store of wealth or an investment, then it's more considered a property, an asset, and then it would have, you could use like kind of exchanges. Now I know that the
is that
the,
true or not? First of all,
not anymore.
Nope. Go ahead, Alex.
Unfortunately, not anymore. I mean, things are definitely not status quo in relation to 2014 or even previous years. So the latest regulation, which still, I mean, it's far cry from full-blown framework, but at least at this point we have notice 2014-21, which explicitly classified cryptocurrencies, i.e. digital assets, as property rather than currency. Interesting fact, even though the regulation was issued in 2014, and that's the latest we have as of today, it still was applied retroactively for all transactions taking place prior to 2014.
Okay. I'm sorry. I just want to slow it down just a moment for people, because we're covering a lot of games fast. Let's back it up, and we'll come back to your point, Andy. But there's a lot of new investors that maybe never had capital gains or losses to think about before. So could you start out a little bit more basic, Alex?
Sure.
With who? What are gains and losses, capital gains and losses?
So basically, hopefully most of taxpayers in this country are aware of the fact that at the end of the year they pay income taxes on income produced during the year, whatever sources of income are. On top of regular income tax rate that applies to such income, U.S. government has imposed a capital gain tax, which is calculated on transactions resulting in capital gains or losses from sale of capital assets. And clear distinction is in terms of capital gain tax from regular income tax, in fact that the duration of time an individual or an entity has possessed such capital assets dictates which rate would be applied to calculation of the tax. So to make a long story short, capital gains on assets that have been held for less than 365 days, i.e. under a year, will be taxed at regular income tax rate bracket. And those are called short-term gains or losses.
And what are those tax rates?
And those tax brackets the regular individual tax brackets that all taxpayers will find themselves in, depending on the level of income. So assuming John Smith is making $10,000 a year and finds himself in the lowest income tax bracket of 10%, and now reports a small capital gain from short-term trades of $1,000, capital tax on $1,000 gain from digital asset trades would be taxed at his regular 10% tax bracket. Assuming the overall income still within the bracket, if capital gain, even if it's a short-term gain, puts that individual in a higher tax bracket due to overall income exceeding the threshold, and now individual, for example, finds himself in a 50% tax bracket as an overall individual tax bracket, that's the rate that would be applied to a portion of income above the threshold, including capital gain from sale of digital assets. Now, if the asset is in possession for 365 or more days, it is constructed to be a long-term capital asset. Sale of such asset triggers long-term capital gain, and American government has been nice enough to discount that rate to 50% as a cap. So for high net worth individuals who normally would find themselves in a very high income tax bracket of 25% or more, they definitely benefit from long-term trades since capital gains of 15% obviously impose less tax liability on them than otherwise. However, for small investors or for people with a low income, obviously 15% capital gain on long-term trades might not be necessarily the best thing either. But this is the distinction. Essentially, it could be taxed either at regular tax bracket or at preferred, quote-unquote, preferred 15% tax rate of long-term capital gain.
Okay, let's just restate it quickly for the audience then. So people that just got into cryptocurrency this year and bought some and then sold it before the end of the year or under 365 days are subject to the short-term capital gains tax rate, and that can go up all the way to the highest tax bracket?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if we have some newly wealthy people or semi-wealthy people that make $100,000 in a year, they're going to be paying at the highest tax bracket if they've cashed out of this stuff.
Yes, unfortunately. And again, we're just passing tip of an iceberg because in reality, I think most of the conversation revolves, at least the context of this conversation revolves around federal concepts. So now you factor in state and local regulation, which is also kicking in with increasing force, and you also have to pay depending on where you live.
Alex, just a second. Are you able to adjust the volume on your microphone from your end?
I can just switch to a different mic. Let me see.
Yeah, it's. I think the volume is too high, and we're getting a little distortion from yours.
Yeah, because I have some Cayman Island questions. I want to get a very clear decision on here.
Okay.
We're speaking with Lexi Kuten. We'll check in just a second. The website is cloudcpas.net. The number is 800-610-2521. And go ahead. And I'm sorry to have interrupted your train of thought, but go ahead and pick up where you left off, Lexi.
So I was just
much
implying
better.
That is much better.
Yeah, much better.
Much better.
We're going to go back and redo the whole show.
I got some Cayman Island questions for you, you know, and I need some clear, decisive information on it.
Just kidding.
That's a good question, and I know where you're going to, where the conversation will potentially go to. And that's what I was alluding to by bringing up state jurisdiction in conversation, because depending on where you live in 52 states, like, let's focus on 50 states. Between the states, there are different level of taxation. And if you in one of heaven states like Florida or Texas, obviously there is no state income tax. So the burden on taxpayer in terms of economic impact from tax liabilities to pay will be a lot less considering the same level of income with an individual who lives, for example, in New York State. or New York City. So that comes into play. And then you can also factor in globalization and the fact that there are jurisdictions outside of the United States that could be even more beneficial or allow more freedom as tax havens for savvy investors. So from my experience, I have been contacted by a number of individuals who are ready to assume dual citizenship just for the sake of moving outside of continental United States to a low tax or tax-free jurisdiction like Cayman or St. Kitts, and actually cashing out at the point in time when they can establish residency offshore.
All right. Alex, not everyone has Andy's problems with putting his wealth in a safe plan. Augie here in the studio has a question. Go ahead.
I was just looking at like-kind exchanges under the newest law and the older law. The 365-day hold of an asset was a way to avoid the heavier tax. But under the new law, the only taxes that are where you can do like-kind exchanges are real estate, as I
correct.
Read it. Right.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, historically, 1031 exchange has been reserved for capital assets or assets used in business operations, but normally those transactions have been limited to real estate. So I believe... and again, this is where we come to a gray area, because right now there is no definitive regulation that prevents you from filing tax returns and treating your digital asset trades into, like, between coins, for example, and not necessarily into fiat as a like-kind exchange.
Okay. We're going to come back to this in a little bit, because I think we're getting ahead of our audience on some of this. Because so if I could just bring them back to where we are. Your gains when you sell your cryptocurrency or your losses have to be recognized on your taxes either as short-term or as long-term. Now, when people are selling their crypto that they bought, they need to be able to state in dollars what the cryptocurrency costs them?
Unfortunately, yes. You will not like most of my answers because they put a lot of burden on taxpayers in terms of data collection and ability to provide support and evidences for positions claimed on tax returns.
No question.
So
on
from standpoint of reporting gains, even digital to digital, you still need to be able to assess records like off exchanges and to analyze those transactions not only in nominal value of coins traded, but also in fiat.
Now, question for you on that. Let's say I bought Bitcoin over the years, and I bought it 2,000, 4,000, 8,000, and I bought it 20,000. And I want to sit there, and I want to go over, and I want to buy some different coin. If I go ahead and take some of my Bitcoin and transfer it to another exchange, and then I go ahead and buy Ethereum, for example, and at that time, Bitcoin's trading at $16,000. Do I have to claim capital gains on what I made for the first $2,000 in that, or can I claim actually a loss because I paid higher on the last, on my last purchase? Can I claim a loss on that and then buy Ethereum and claim a loss on the Bitcoin transfer, or is that because I'm still holding the main asset? I can't do that.
That was a long way to go for the audience. So, let me see if I understand, because if I'm having trouble. The Bitcoin you're talking about, that was bought on a different exchange.
Well, let's say I bought Bitcoin at $5,000 and I bought it $20,000.
On exchange A.
On exchange A. And I want to trade over on exchange B and buy something else.
Right.
So Bitcoin at this time is trading at $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I transfer half a Bitcoin over there, and I buy that other asset. Can I claim a loss? Because the last purchase price was $20,000, I'm selling at $10,000.
I think the question is it first in, first out? Is that required for cryptocurrency on your recognition?
It's not required. And some taxpayers go to the extent of doing specific identification by trade by coin. But FIFO seems to be, and again, everybody understands that FIFO is least favorable least pro-taxpayer system that entitles Uncle Sam to the highest tax. But this is the most conservative position a reasonable investor should take nowadays, because all other positions will result in potential underpayment, additional fines and penalties. So the burden, I mean, it all boils down to how risk-averse a taxpayer is or how risk-acceptant he is. But FIFA seems to be the most conservative and prudent position to take. Like I said, it's not the best option. It's obviously the most expensive option, but it's the safest option. You don't have to take it. You can obviously use a last-in, first-out or specific identification to actually sell the most expensive Bitcoin first.
Okay, let me give another scenario here. We have Exchange A and Exchange B. I buy Bitcoin on Exchange A early in the year. I buy Bitcoin on Exchange B later in the year. Then on Exchange B, I sell that Bitcoin. Do I recognize the gain or loss on Exchange B with the cost it was when I bought it on Exchange B, or do I have to go to the first Bitcoin I bought on Exchange A?
It's a good question. So basically, if you mix funds between currencies, or you move funds out of currency or off exchange accounts to cold storage or like single wallet, it makes the whole process a lot more convoluted. But in general, you are allowed to use separate wallet or separate account FIFA system. So to answer your question shortly, if you keep separate records and separate wallets, then your cost basis for sales on Exchange B will be coming from the prices you purchased originally coins on Exchange B. So cost basis from Exchange A does not come in equation, as long as you can separately track trades and report capital gains from each wallet or each exchange separately.
And let's give Alexei Kutin some credit here, because I'm pretty sure that if you talk to another CPA that was just familiar with capital gains and losses but wasn't helping people with cryptocurrency, it wouldn't occur to them that you might put your cryptocurrency in separate wallets from separate exchanges.
Well, and, you know, I mean, we do that all the time in the stock market. I'm sure Augie does the same thing. You have separate trading exchanges.
Well,
so
yeah,
that,
but
you know,
I think most CPAs would know about that, but I don't know if other ones would know about the hardware wallets the way Alexei Kutin of Kutin Associates.
Absolutely.
Well,
like
Augie, go ahead.
This is more like real estate. If you sell a property 20 years ago and you've made a trade transaction long term, you have the lower tax rate if you sell that second property you traded into. However, if you keep making trades, you do accumulate the liability unless you die and hand it off to your family. Then it goes away entirely. So the point is, you accumulate the tax liability, all the write-offs, everything else accumulates on the last property you sell.
Well, that's for real estate.
It's no different.
Yeah, I believe we're going to talk about that in a second. I don't believe that would be the same for cryptocurrency, would it, Alexei?
No, it's not, because in reality you essentially, I think, mixing in concept of like-kind exchange, because you keep deferring capital gain or loss in case of real estate to a future time where you can probably perform a long-term capital gain or loss taxation on the very last transaction when you realize the deferred gain. In case of cryptocurrencies, you really almost put in a position, by government not saying much about it, but you're put in a position of taking the most conservative position. And the most conservative position is you cannot apply like-kind exchange.
No,
you need to realize gain on each trade.
Let me just
to be able to provide records for those trades and
right.
establish evidence sufficient enough to warrant credibility of sale position and cost basis position. So from that angle, it's not like real estate,
okay.
Unfortunately.
All right. Let me just alert everybody that's in the studio here that I want to try and keep this on real-life examples and not too theoretical, because the people that are most going to benefit from this are the new people that are just coming into this, as well as Well, that's almost everybody, really.
Yeah, yeah. Is well, I have a real life question.
And
here,
and you can get to that, but in your rundowns, there are the questions I want to make sure that we get to for our audience. So, Alexi, we can run over a little bit from our scheduled time. That will be okay. But so we get to the capital gains and losses. We talked about when you're buying Bitcoin on one exchange or another exchange or a different cryptocurrency on one exchange and you buy the same one on another exchange. But now let's – and you recognize it in your dollar value. So that's easy on some place like Coinbase where it has a dollar transaction every time you do it. But some exchanges, you have to – if you want to buy one of these secondary currencies, cryptocurrencies, they want you to pay in Bitcoin. So you have Bitcoin that you know your dollar cost was, and now you use that Bitcoin – and let's just keep it simple. You have a half a Bitcoin, and you're going to buy a half a Bitcoin's worth, a half a Bitcoin's worth of cryptocurrency X. How do you recognize that? Do you have to recognize your capital gain when you use that Bitcoin? And then that's what Augie was getting at with the like-kind exchange, that other currency. But I want to make it real simple and clear for the audience.
A real simple and clear answer is, unfortunately, yes. And again, since the burden is on taxpayer, it's not the pretty task, and that's where probably professionals like me could step in and assist taxpayers. However, even today at this early stage, we already have two great websites that can facilitate compliance for millions of taxpayers if they decide to report digital asset gains. So between say website like CoinTracking. Info or bitcoin.tax, where actually I'm advertising as a currency specialist, you can basically pay, or there is even free subscription where a taxpayer could create an account and through a series of simple instructions, upload CSV or other format extracted reports from different exchanges, whether exchanges are domestic or offshore. So these two great websites I just mentioned, they list major exchanges all over the world, and for taxpayers who are willing to connect APIs from exchange directly to the website, you eliminate the task of loading the report in the first place. So the website essentially picks up all of the trades from exchange and provide you with end report tools and utilities to create tax reports or proprietary reports for tax software that clearly spells out capital gains and losses and does all kinds of calculations based on the options specified by taxpayer. So
what is the name of that again, please?
So we have CoinTracking.info, I-N-F-O, and we have Bitcoin.tax. These two websites essentially do all the legwork for you because the AI behind the website looks up coin prices, and they do list all the thousands of coins that currently exist worldwide available for price lookup. So based on the imported trades from exchanges, the system will identify the fiat equivalent in terms of cost basis as well as in terms of sale price. And, again, providing options such as last in, first out, or first in, first out, like-kind exchange yes, like-kind exchange no. User has an option to calculate capital gain or loss. There are different methodologies available to a regular taxpayer today. However, again, my advice would be to, if anyone is using these tools, to use most conservative options in terms of calculation because all other options will end up costing a little more.
Okay. And that was bittax.com, and was it coincheck.info?
It was cointracking.info.
Coinchecking.info.
Coin tracking.
No, coin tracking.
Coin tracking. You're tracking down the rabbit.
Okay. All right.
CoinTracking.info and Bitcoin.tax, T-A-X.
Now, question for you. If I'm I'm a simple guy, and I have hundreds and hundreds of trades. Is it just easiest for me to go, hey, you know, last January I started with 20,000 in Bitcoin. This January I got 40,000 in Bitcoin. I'm just paying taxes on 20,000, and I'm through with it?
I mean, yes and no. You can throw your fluctuation on the back of a napkin, if you will. But
I like that.
I guess the burden is on you to prove those positions if IRS will ever question your tax return. So,
well, I mean, in a legitimate account, let's say I put in $10,000 this last year, and at January 1st, it's worth $25,000. If I just say, you know what, I'm going to pay taxes on all $15,000 regardless. So I'm not trying to get around taxes.
I would
need to look into your personal situation closer, and obviously this is not the best place or format to provide such an advice. Plus, I wouldn't like to be held liable for any personal advice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's get back.
You have options. All I'm saying is that you do have options. How far and how deep you want to go with your calculation.
And you have his phone number.
And I do have his phone number. And one more question before, just because I've been waiting to ask this all week, Henry. I have to ask it. Does an investment trust or setting up an LLC give you any tax protection when you're a trader?
Could you please elaborate?
Let's hold off that till the end, please.
Okay.
Because I want to stay on the things that people really need to know that are going this. And we can run over, and we can get into more of the minutiae of this. So we've covered the fact that you have to recognize your gains and losses, capital gains and losses. You have to keep track of your where you're making these trades, and he's given us some tools for that. The other one I want to very much talk about, because I know lots of people are in this situation, and that is about the report of foreign bank and financial accounts, FBAR. And there's a lot of people here that are trading on exchanges outside the country. I'm in the minority because I try and do all my trades on a U.S. Exchange because I just don't want the headaches. But what are the responsibilities for taxpayers when they have these assets on foreign exchanges?
So it's again, one of the gray or I would say tricky areas to give this to give definitive guidance on, but there has to be a clear understanding of what FBAR and for that matter Form 8938 filing requirements are. So, just as a preamble, FBAR is a separate from income tax compliance regulation. Essentially, in layman terms, it stipulates that U.S. person is required to file annually a certain report about his or her ownership of a signature authority over foreign financial accounts. So foreign financial and the threshold is $10,000. So to the extent you owe a foreign account, financial account valued at over $10,000, you need to file electronically for so-called Form 114 with the Department of Treasury, which is a separate filing independent of income tax compliance that regular taxpayers do.
And
now,
is that if it hits $10,000 just for the blink of an eye, sometime during the year?
Yeah.
So if
at any time during the calendar year, account value exceeded $10,000, you're supposed to report that.
Okay. So it's
now the critical aspect is what constructs foreign financial account, because in reality we're talking about deposit accounts and custodial accounts. So to the extent, say, someone has an account on Binance Exchange, which is a Chinese exchange with hardware in Japan, that individual might not necessarily have a financial account offshore because such exchange account does not provide custodial or deposit functionality, i.e. you cannot cash from Binance Exchange directly to an offshore bank account. However, if you do happen to have an offshore bank account, then that institution really triggers the FBAR filing requirements. So It's kind of a gray area, but the rule of thumb is that it applies only to instances where an individual owns a deposit or custodial account.
Well, that's really good to know, because poor Alex over there with his all his money on CoinCheck and a ton of other Japanese accounts, he's sitting okay then.
Now, you said it's a gray area, though, so
there's no gray
area
here.
Has there actually been a decision or a regulation characterizing those accounts, or is it just
there is regulation characterizing those accounts? All I'm saying is that right now, for example, Binance does not allow United States customers to have custodial deposit accounts.
Yeah.
Again, it's just an example. I'm not sure how all foreign exchanges operate, but for example, Coinbase does allow that functionality, and even say other exchanges like Kraken, which is hard to trace or place into any particular country, it does provide deposit and custodial account services. So you can literally deposit or wire money from your bank account to an account associated with an exchange. So
Coinbase
So to the extent, even non-US exchanges, they do offer customer base functionality to deposit funds directly in the country where they're located. So there are offshore exchanges that allow U.S. customers to deposit dollars into exchange directly. My point is that if there is such an element that allows a taxpayer to deposit fiat money into exchange, that exchange by default has to file necessary state and federal paperwork to qualify as a financial institution, because that element constructs deposit or custodial account which is provided to a customer. So those exchanges definitely fall under the scope in case when they are located offshore.
All right. Now,
if you're dealing with an exchange that does not provide custodial services, then it doesn't really construct a financial institution.
I like that.
So from that angle, you excluded from FBAR reporting for funds held in those exchanges.
Now, Kraken lists a San Francisco address, but they accept euros. So how do we determine what they are, whether they're offshore or onshore?
Well, it wouldn't matter.
It doesn't really matter, because they provide – you can't deposit funds.
Yeah. It doesn't matter if it's onshore or offshore. Is what he's saying is, if it's offshore and it has deposits, then you must claim that and fill out a separate form. But if it's also in the United States and in Europe, as long as you're buying it through the United States exchange, like the Kraken in San Francisco or wherever, then you're fine, because that reporting is already being done.
Correct.
What about someone? Say we have an offshore exchange that will accept currency. Does it has to be your native currency to qualify?
If you had
a Japanese exchange that accepted yen, but that you can also transfer your Bitcoin in there, does that then become one that has to be recognized?
I think you're missing the point, gentlemen. Japanese exchange could perfectly fine accept yen and not accept anything else. Question is, you as a U.S. investor, do you have a custodial account in Japan that allows you to move money directly?
You
can move money from United States account, if you can wire money from United States account to an exchange, then you are literally falling under the radar. So you would need to report FBAR, file FBAR report, because institution is offshore. And at the end of the day, you are storing something of value in excess of $10,000 in an offshore financial institution.
So something like KuCoin, where you can't really deposit money directly and there's no transfer from bank account to the exchange itself, really doesn't constitute that, even though it's over in South Korea.
Correct. Correct.
However,
that's where the NEM are.
Yeah, that's right. But Bitfinex, you used to be able to, you know, let's say it's Singapore, and you have a bank in Singapore, and you transfer money to Singapore and then transfer it into the account, then that has to be recorded. So if I'm just trying
Not only that, you nailed the coffin, so to speak, because the second you mentioned you have a Singapore bank account, that in itself institute's requirement to file FBAR. Forget about the next level where you bring in an exchange to the equation.
Yeah.
Just the fact that you have a foreign account, like a bank account, from which you can move funds to exchange account, constitutes FBAR requirements. So this is kind of goes step before we start dealing with digital assets.
Okay.
I think the critical point is if exchange is offshore and exchange allows
wire transfers
from foreign accounts, i.e. United States bank account.
In that case, you need to
dig a little bit further and identify whether such foreign exchange provides local customers offshore with custodial and deposit accounts. So it all boils down to simple fact: if exchange does direct dealings with customers in the native currency, in the native country, and provides deposit and custodial account services, regardless of how you place your money into that exchange, whether you in the country or offshore, it doesn't really matter because by default that institute that qualifies that organization as a foreign financial institution. So the second you have foreign financial institution or simply financial institution definition in your mind, it imposes FBAR regulation.
Now, question is there any benefit to forming an LLC or a trust or something like that where you can defer those trades?
So it's a good question. I think somebody raised the question a bit earlier in the context of risk management. I think, but the real benefit is in the treatment of capital versus non-capital gains and losses. So for a business organization explicitly created to deal and trade in digital assets, all gains from sales, hopefully gains, not losses, but all transactions that result in reportable gains and losses, they're deemed ordinary income, and as such are taxed at ordinary income tax rate, not preferred capital gain tax rate.
Okay.
So from that angle, it could be beneficial depending on circumstances, but usually and the structure of the company, because now you get into more complex
corporates,
schemas where tax structure might not necessarily match legal structure for the benefit of tax shifting to owners as opposed to income being taxed at corporate level. But these schemas usually need to be well weighted in terms of percentage benefit, because at the end of the day, capital gain tax of 15% on long-term trades could be a lot better and a lot less painful price to pay as opposed to more elaborate tax schemas that provide minimal impact in terms of tax savings, but have additional administrative burden or other complexities that they impose. So, again, it's a loaded question, but yes, if the intention is to get away from capital gain and report gains and losses from trades as regular income, then setting up a separate business entity and conducting all trades through that business entity could be a viable option.
We've been speaking with Alexi Kooten of Kooten & Associates, CPAs, PC. They're in Tampa. Their phone number is 800-610-2521. That's 800-610-2521. The easiest way, though, is just go to the website, and there's lots of resources there, too. And the website is cloudcpas.net. So the word cloudcpas.net. And you can get in touch with Alexi and his company. And Alexi, what would you like to leave our audience with before we say goodbye?
Really would like to wish everybody happy trading, more gains than losses, and definitely be cautious as far as it comes to compliance, and potentially take on the most conservative position you could possibly take. be conservative, because all other options usually end up costing a lot more. And make sure you have a good ethics in terms of keeping records, because again, the burden is on the taxpayer. So in case in cases when exchange goes offline or simply disappears, is a poor excuse to say to IRS, I don't have records and therefore I cannot claim any gains or losses. So the burden is always on the taxpayer. Keep good records, keep good spirit, and
find yourself a good accountant. Yeah. Like you, Alexei, you sound
find
very good.
Find yourself a good accountant with whom you have enough trust to establish sensitive matters and design a long-term strategy, because at the end of the day, what's most important is not how much you're going to pay for any particular year, but rather how much you can save in the future by making correct moves and strategizing your legal tax structure and overall tax planning for the years to come. So Bitcoin is not changing anything in this respect. It brings in additional complexity, but it can be planned around. And there are different deferred taxation schemas that can be applied. And when I say the word schema, I mean good sense of that word. We're not trying to defraud the government. But there are areas that can be interpreted differently, and accounting in general is subject to interpretation. It's not defined in stone science. So to the extent you can establish credible, conservative, and yet satisfactory to yourself position, that can only be achieved with long-term planning.
I like the wink-wink at the end, you know, with an accountant going, yeah.
Alexei, thanks so much for joining us again. The cloudcpas.net, 800-610-2521. And I will follow up with some contact with you later so you know how to get the audio from the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I tell you what, that was great, Henry. I mean, that was a great guest.
Especially once
I mean,
we switched the microphone.
There. I just, you know, I need that accountant that when I look at him is going, wink, 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 wink. Yeah, you say the wink, wink, you know.
No, that's not. And then we couldn't see any winks.
I know, but I need that kind of accountant. I want to sit across from him and him tell me, you know,
You don't need that kind of accountant. You're going to go to jail. Do you know what tax evasion is?
Yeah, you know.
I don't know if Alex had a sigh of relief there on that FBAR report.
Big relief.
My goodness.
Well, you got one expert opinion on that.
It makes sense. You're transferring money there. As long as it's not something that's coming out of your bank account, or you don't have a bank account it doesn't meet those requirements. In my opinion, and I'm not an accountant, so don't listen to me. But I'll tell you what
Ray,
Gold Bug
do
One
that.
Is doing.
Please avoid that.
Call Alexei. Just don't even mention our names, except when you give us credit for sending you there. So, all right, we have the Bradenton Bitcoin and Cryptocurrency Meetup coming up very shortly, 3:30 at Mocha Joe's, and we will see you there. We'll try and interpret these questions that we asked Alexei for you and give you our best version of his answers, and we'll have some video from the North American Bitcoin Conference, as well as maybe we can even talk Goldbug One into talking about the price volatility in the market the last couple of weeks. A lot of people have that on their mind, and we'll end with a break and join you next week right here at WPR. Hopefully transmitters back up. I'm pretty sure we'll be by then, and thanks to Augie, Alex, and Andy for being here.
Thank you.